know your broken heart. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to, that was really loud, welcome to We Love No Other podcast from lineupwar.com. I'm your host, Robert. Here's what we're doing. Since we did the last one with Dan from the Field Pass, and we talked golf, and he talked about trying to walk on to the Illinois golf team, I decided to do these with everybody on the other Illini Board podcast. So tonight, also from the Field Pass, we have John Bayless, who I thought was pronounced Ballas for the longest time until we talked about it. And we're going to talk football recruiting. Right, John?
Exactly. This is kind of a nice little manifestation of all of our... This is like it coming to fruition.
Yes.
I think it was like, whether it be DMs or emails or like when I was on the deuce here and there.
Yep.
This is finally all coming to fruition.
Yes. I love it. And we're going to start by this. Okay. What's your current age is what?
I'm 26 years old.
And your graduation year was 18?
17 undergrad.
17.
Nice little master's. Graduated in 18. So I got a nice 5 years on campus. It was great.
I had 5 years on campus, and I've only got the bachelor's to show for it. And I don't even
five years is 5 years.
Yes, that's right. Okay, so we were just having this conversation before I hit record, and then I said, I'm going to hit record so we can have this. So you were born in October. We don't have to give out your like birth date and dox you here.
But, no, let's dox me.
Okay.
That's okay.
Okay, you were born October of 94.
Yep.
You said October 7th.
Correct.
You don't mind being doxed.
I thought
that was right by, I predicted the Purdue game where Ken Dilger got tackled at the one, but it wasn't. You were born the day before the Dana Howard guarantee game, October 8th of 94, where we had lost to Purdue and we lost the Cannon and it was a mess. And this team that was supposed to be going somewhere, and I believe we had rejoined, that we were ranked preseason. We lose to Washington State. Then we destroy Missouri in the one first down game. Then we beat Northern Illinois. Then we get ranked again and we lose at home to Purdue. Then we're going to at Ohio State. And Howard says, we're not losing at Ohio State. I guarantee we're going to win. We're playing number 17 Ohio State. We do win. And then that season was. So what do you, like, do you have any, I know you're not a memory of that season, but like, as a younger guy, but an Illinois football fanatic, what do you know about 94?
So here's the, this doesn't ruffle any feathers. So I was like my dad's
ruffle,
from Northwest
I
Indiana.
Like it. Yes, do it. Do it.
my dad's from Northwest Indiana and he played football in college. He's actually, it's funny whenever we talk about like Blake Jarisotti. He's from the Southern Conference.
Oh, Wofford, yeah.
Which is, my dad played at Furman. And then he actually transferred to UNLV, but that doesn't really matter. Just to set the scene.
Yes.
So obviously football, Indiana, he was like a Notre Dame fan growing up. So like he instilled in me and my brother, and he still had relatives that lived there. So for the first 17 years of my life.
Oh, yes. Here we go.
I was on the bad side.
This is so good.
And here's the thing. I couldn't have done like a faster switch in my life. Like I immediately cut that tie. Once I was a U of I guy, like it immediately just became ingrained in my DNA that then I was going to go through, which objectively I've had legitimately probably the worst fandom of any, like in terms of revenue generating sports.
Yep.
Probably like you could put up my college years or even the post college years until recently with basketball up against anyone and be like, wow, this guy decided to be an Illini fan. And then this all happened.
Yep. So you got to campus in 13.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It was late 2013.
So for football, if we go into 18, so for football, you had 13, 14, 15, 17. No, wait. Yes. You had the 13th season through the 17th season because you got your master's in spring of 18. Okay.
Exactly.
So you had just the one bowl game, the barely bowl game in 14. And that's it. And then basketball, good Lord, that's a stretch.
I mean, because like, and I do remember, so like I remember obviously being like going to school and whatnot and talking about the year, like the perfect season and all that jazz. Like I was tuned in. It's just that I wasn't, you know, that wasn't my school, but obviously I have some very vivid memories and all that good jazz. But yeah, no, it's one of those where I hope this doesn't, like, you know, get my status. But it, the funny thing is, and you can probably attest to this in terms of how many, you know, words and hours and thoughts that I give now to Illini right. sports.
Absolutely.
I think I've yes. more than made up for it a little bit.
I love that you feel like there's still a penance to pay.
Oh, I really do. Like, I feel like I haven't quite earned it yet, but I feel like my punishment was the fact that I went through the absolute worst time. I was doing that mental math, like, okay. or not mental math, but like I was just doing that in my grad school year. I was like, this has been terrible. Like,
yes.
I was excited about IO deciding, but otherwise mm-hmm. it was a whole lot of no bueno.
Yeah, let's figure this out. So you get there fall of 13. So your first basketball season was 14.
Mm-hmm.
So you were part of that graduating class, which was the first one since the 70s that didn't see an NCAA tournament game.
Mm-hmm.
Not a single game. And any other four-year student all the way back to 83 had seen the tournament. So somebody who got there in like 80 got to see their senior year. They got to see a tournament game. But yeah. So you were in that class first time since the 70s. You went your entire 4 years and you went five without a single NCAA tournament game.
Yep. It was all bad.
The closest you got was probably freshman year. They probably needed two more wins in the Big Ten tournament.
If Tracy Abrams just uses the backboard against Michigan, like I'm not gonna.
Yep.
We can armchair quarterback it now because it's so many years later.
Yep.
But I remember being in class. It was a Friday. Like lab, yep. or it wasn't a lab, but it was a discussion for one of my accounting classes or whatever. And we had it pulled up on the projector. Everyone's watching it, and heart just sinks when you just see get that shot, and then
two things
about
that.
To come.
One, I didn't watch because I was at Gately Stadium watching an Illinois football spring practice, which was happening that same Friday. So
I was one of the 17 of
yes,
you.
Yes, I drove St. Louis to Chicago. Now I think I flew that time. No, I drove. I drove that time. But yes, I drove St. Louis to Chicago, took a day off work so I could cover the practice, and that afternoon was that Michigan game. Two, I still maintain they still needed help even if Abrams makes that. I still think they needed another win, and even with that, it was still close because they were 7-11 in the Big Ten. Like, it's really, really rare to go 7 wins in the Big Ten. And or was it 8-12? No, that they hadn't expanded yet. So yeah, it was 7-11 in the Big Ten. That's really tough road to get to the tournament. So I still don't think they were, even if Abrams makes that shot. I think they needed one more win. But that's we're down three different paths here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've gotten on many a tangent now. It's just that was my experience in college. It was like, you know, football, you kind of knew what you were gonna get, but then basketball, it would be like that was my senior year as well. It was when we had the Michigan State and Rutgers as our final two regular season games. And I remember being at the Michigan State game at home was one of my favorite. Mm-hmm. When it was the last one I went to, like, all my buddies and whatnot, because mm-hmm. we were all still on campus. And I remember saying before, I was like, we're going to go 1-1. Like, we're going to gack it to Rutgers if we somehow pull out this Michigan State win. And then, of course, like, our resume, like, we were going to be on bubble watch. And then we were going to need some luck in it. So I felt like that was kind of quintessential of my experience in college. And last year, going forward.
Yeah, that's crazy. So you did have, let's see, was it 15 where they were at least like inches over the bubble in early March, and then the loss at Purdue, and then the first round complete devastation loss to Michigan again, and then go to the NIT. And you're suddenly down 41-12 to Alabama.
Yep. And Bama ended up winning it all, I remember, and being like, oh, can we take sauce on that? No.
And that's it. So we're not even getting to the stuff we're going to talk about yet. What was the, like, what was the highlight? What was the sports highlight? What was the single, like, what was the moment? So for, like, me, okay, so I'm 91-96. Okay, so that 94 football season was pretty special to me just because, you know, the upset at Ohio State and the, you know, this great game against Penn State and you know, everything else. Like, so I have these gosh, maybe the day after your birthday was the football highlight? Your literal birthday? No, 93 beating Michigan, Johnny Johnson. That was the single moment. So there was that. And then maybe, you know, I also had the Andy Kaufman shot, which was a bigger deal than just beating a top 10 Iowa team at home. It was, you know, taste it, Bruce Pearl moment. So I would say probably the Kaufman shot for basketball and then the Johnny Johnson pass for football. So those are my two. Those are my basketball and my football moments while I was a student. Bowl game wise, I did have one. You know, Makovic was the coach my freshman year in 91. And they did also make a bowl in, let's see, 92 and 94. So I did have three bowl games, although all were six-win seasons. That sounds familiar. Yeah, I think those are my two highlights. So for you, for your years, what's your football? Hold on. Actually, let me guess here. So 13 football season through 17. Football highlight is maybe, I guess, the Penn State field goal, maybe? In 14, the making the field goal, the Reisner field goal to beat Penn State to keep the bowl hopes alive, and then we go win at Northwestern to go to a bowl. Was that, or is another moment stick out for you?
So if we're going moment, because like I want, like, in terms of how I view this, it's like I got to be at the game.
Yes.
In terms of like my, and so the single, like the moment, it was either.
Yeah, and students were gone for that Penn State game. That was Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving mm-hmm. break had started, so students were gone. That was as empty as Memorial Stadium got.
One of those like viral tweets of, you know, the student section.
Exactly, exactly.
Maybe a dozen people.
Yep. Trying to do the card trick. Yep.
Yep. It would either be, so senior year for football, it was either the North Carolina game or the Michigan State game. And in the North Carolina game, because Danny and I got seats, like we were in the second deck.
Yep.
Looking down, we were in like the student section, like pretty front row. And that, because it was fairly sold out.
Yes.
So probably like the most well-attended game I'd been at thus far as a student.
There were only two games that had that atmosphere in the last 10 years. And it was Arizona State in 11 and North Carolina in 16.
That's exactly.
Only two that got anywhere close.
That's exactly what Danny was saying when we were talking about how the environment of the like game felt. He was like, you know, obviously I wasn't Johnny Illini at that point, but he was talking about Arizona State and how sick that was. And I was like, well, hopefully we can, you know, get something sweet to happen tonight. And then it, but the Keyshawn Vaughn run, that like, and the safety,
yes,
both of those moments were just like, you know, it, like I can somewhat, obviously the McCourt field goal is like, possibly my favorite live sports moment of all time.
Sure.
But those two were at least at that point my comparison. And then those were like the moments. Obviously, then, you know, you kind of come down from that and they lose. But the Michigan State game, I guess I had a good run against Michigan State going to games my senior year in bowl sports because that was Dad's day.
Uh-huh.
And obviously my dad being a football guy, he got down. Danny's dad got down and we were like all hanging out. It was like, that was more about maybe let's say the day. Obviously they won and it was a great, great win and being able to spend that with like my dad was awesome.
Yep.
And then like, you know, we like hung around it and like the whole atmosphere after that was just awesome to enjoy because most of my dad's days were absolute L's.
Right.
But so that like, if we're going like all encompassing moment in terms of a game, then it was probably Michigan State. But
you're talking about the 16 Michigan State Jeff George game or the 17 Michigan State. Wait, 16.
Michigan 16. State. Yes.
Yeah. 16. The Jeff George to, oh God, Sam Mays. Whew, I pulled that out. Yes, 16.
I'm going to trust you on that.
Yes.
Because I could Google it and fact check you, but I'm, you know what? We're just.
17 was 17 was winless Big Ten. So it obviously wasn't 17. That's interesting.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, slim pickings.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Like, you know, you mentioned the you know, the moment in North Carolina and the Rocking Stadium. Like, I think of that Penn State game in 94, even though we lost, maybe more than any other game, just because it was number two Penn State. They'd been number one the week before, and then they just slipped to number two. That was probably the greatest never put in the second string moment when polls are a factor. So you're too young to know this. I'm gonna school you. I'm gonna teach you here. So Penn State is number one in the polls. They're playing Indiana. They're up like 38-10 or something like that. And Indiana scores onside kick, fumble scores or something like this. And it ends up like a 9-point win, what should have been something like 45-10. And that was just enough that they got passed in the polls. They moved to number two the next week. They come to Illinois, and then, you know, even worse, they need a touchdown with 30 seconds left to beat Illinois, and there was just no chance. They were you know, they went undefeated, but they did not win the national title. But yeah, that, even though it was a loss, like that first quarter, Illinois went up 21-0. I can't remember the stadium like that. It's November. I've told the story 100 times. I'm shirtless. I've got an N on my chest. They picked the widest letter for me. I was the N of Illini, and we had one extra guy, so we did an exclamation point, and which never works because it reads like two I's on the end. It was just a whole mess. But we're trying to get on
super
ABC.
Excited Illini.
Yes, Illini.
Oh yeah.
Yes, Illini, like a plural of a insect or something.
Like we're back in middle school texting,
right?
Just
right.
Adding extra consonants, yes, or vowels, yes, where they just aren't needed.
I did,
because I know you would know.
I did
that.
So much texting in middle school. Good lord, you know, back in 86. So basketball wise, I think my moment, even though I wasn't there that night for the Kauffman shot. That was like the game, like a single moment for basketball. I still have the memory of the one tournament win. Like, it was just a big deal to win a tournament game again, over Long Beach State. There's a longtime NBA player who was on that Long Beach State team. Was it Byron Russell? I think it was Byron Russell. I'm gonna have to look that up. So yeah, so if I go basketball moment, if I go moment, it's the Kauffman shot. If I go game that I remember feeling really good, it would have been the Long Beach State win, Rennie Clemens. And for you, basketball moment was, I already forgot what you said.
It had to be. I mean, it would have to be Michigan State getting, yeah, that win and feeling like there's a legitimate chance at getting to a tourney if you just take care of Rutgers and get a win or two in the Big Ten tourney.
That's Hill's senior year, Malcolm's senior year, and he kind of, didn't he have like 30 something in that Michigan State win?
I just remember being like, how are they going to contain Bridges? Because that was like, that's when you knew, yep, like, okay, this is obvious NBA prospect, because seeing that live is just a completely different ball game. You're just like, this dude could take over the game at any moment he wants to.
Yep.
And he did from time to time. And
yep.
But yeah, Malcolm definitely took care of business. And that was, like I said, senior year, John just had something for Michigan State, apparently, whenever he attended.
Which, it needs to be noted, having IO these last few years, especially this year, having that guy that there's some Nebraska fans talking about the game right now, saying, man, that guy could just take over whenever he wanted. It's been a long time since we had that moment.
Two of them. Like, yes, we had two guys that it was just, like, that's the, yes, thing that A, kind of sucks about how last season ended, and B, like, in terms of my Illini fan brain, I'm just like, see, I'll, you know, if you listen to the Field Pass, think I've let this, but like, I'm a Packers fan, so I've been spoiled with some of my fandoms, and other fandoms I've been very much so not spoiled, like being a Cubs fan for most of my life. Yep. But like, you know, having two Hall of Fame quarterbacks in my lifetime is something that's in, you know, hopefully they drafted a third.
Right.
But it's one of those where like, then I completely have to do a 180 for my like Illini fan brain. And then like having to respect the fact that it's like, oh yeah, like, IO and Kofi being on the same team for my team is just ridiculous. Like, that might never happen again in our lifetimes. And
I love that we're 20 minutes into a Get to Know You podcast, and you've already dropped Notre Dame growing up and Packers fan. This is
This is great for my Q rating. I definitely think you're going to have me back on. And it's definitely not going to regress back to, okay, yeah, there was that one guy on the field pass who now just DMs Robert occasionally.
Oh, so what was – okay, I have always said, I have friends who grew up Indiana fans and then came to Illinois, like were huge Bobby Knight fan. Like I have no problem with somebody's childhood fandom then switching once they're an alum or once they're a student to Illinois. So what was the transition like for you, you know, growing up Notre Dame and then switching to Illinois?
Yeah, it's interesting because like I've got some buddies who – like we were big Notre Dame fans growing up, and some of them are still like huge, like they can separate their like fandom of the athletics of Notre Dame from the academics of Notre Dame. And for me, if I wasn't going to school there, then I was going to immediately burn that bridge of fandom of the athletics in my head. Yeah. And the thing is that like, you know, we don't need to get into it, but I definitely felt like I was qualified to get into that school. Like there's no doubt in my mind. And then I know some kids who like, you know, had lower test scores than me or not at the quite GPA and they got in.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just like, cause they had some connection or legacy or something like that. So I was like, all right, F this. Like, I just can't stand that. I'm never going to consider being like a fan of theirs again, unless I've got kids who go there or something like that.
Yeah.
But then it just turned full time to once I decided to go to U of I, which was, I mean, it's weird because it's like they have a top accounting school, obviously. Yeah. And I knew from like a really young age that I wanted to be an accountant, which is also weird to put out into the universe.
Yeah.
But it's one of those where I was like, oh yeah, I'm good with math. Yeah. I guess I'm going to be an accountant at like, you know, the age of 8.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, so then when like deciding where to go to school, it was like, you know, I actually probably could have played ball at some like D3 schools or potentially some, if I once again, we don't need to get into the whole backstory
origin
of John Bales
story.
But, yeah, exactly. But there were some, like I have some regrets about how I dealt with some of the Ivy interest that I potentially could have had if I had pressed on the gas a little bit with that, but I was just ignorant. Like I didn't know about camps and whatnot, but that's neither here nor there. But I could have gone like to a couple D3 schools to play football. And then I was like, don't really feel like getting my brain bashed in or my knees bent for, you know, a place that might not draw as well as my high school games, which is small Catholic school in the suburbs.
Yep.
So then it turned into let's go to U of I and then let's become like diehard Illini fans. And, and now I'm here talking to you.
Yes.
So
what a
story this has been.
What a story. And I mean, it's just so great. Like, so I've always made this argument. There is no more pure a fandom than Illini football. Like, no, you know, there is not a bandwagoner among us. Like, we have 5 winning seasons in 25 years. You know, this is not a choice made lightly. The 17 sometimes feels like the 17. It is a very pure fandom because, you know, so that's why it's fascinating to me for you to go from probably the bandwagoniest fan base to maybe the single least bandwagon fan base in America.
Exactly.
Like, give me some paragraphs on that transition, or if it seemed like that, or if you even noticed that as you kind of made your fandom transition.
Yeah. So like, that wasn't really anything that, it was pretty easy. Cause like I can dive pretty well into like investing into something once I like, you know, as I care about something, then I will be able to put all my time and effort and energy into that. So the transition from like, you know, burning that bridge of not getting into ND, and then once I decided where I was going, then it turned into, okay, like, you know, football season rolled around and I was, you know, in. I was like, okay, going as many games as we can, going to the Soldier Field game to see them get spanked. And then, you know, there might not erosion, but then it turned into, okay, maybe my sophomore and junior years when I'm just, you know, I'll watch that in my room or something like that instead. But it's still one of those where like, you know, I was making sure I was getting that viewing. And it's you're correct in the sense that, like, it's not for the light of heart. Like, yeah. you don't choose to just become an Illini football fan and put a lot of time and attention to that.
Yep.
If there isn't, you know, a screw or two loose in the head. But no, the transition was pretty easy just because I was, you know, pretty cut and dry with getting on and transitioning from one fandom to the next. So then it just turned into, okay, any kind of energy that I had that was going to something else college fandom wise was immediately channeled into, and I was always a bigger college football guy. Like, I love college basketball and it's entertaining to watch, but I really, like, I can't follow, you know, multiple conferences and what, I mean, I can, yeah. But it's not like, you know, I don't know who the Colorado State third leading scorer is,
right.
But I could tell you, you know, a fun fact about, like, you know, Fresno State's, you know, like, it's probably something about Devontae Adams and receiving,
sure.
Or
sure.
Those kind of things. Like,
yep.
College football was always my draw. So
yeah.
Then we got the Illini.
Yeah. So when you say Soldier Field game, you're talking about 13, the Washington game. So that would have been your freshman year.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, it was cool. Yeah, that was actually compared to South Florida or compared to the Northwestern game there, like, that was actually pretty well attended and decently competitive game. And we were coming off that Cincinnati win, which shouldn't have happened. And we were thinking, hey, corner turned. And
you want to talk about the wildest thing I've ever seen live in person was Munchie Legault's leg. Like, yeah. I see. And here's the thing. Being a man who watches, like, line play and all, like, I'm from the, like, student section, you can get a pretty good concept of, you know, like, passing routes, which I also very much so enjoy.
Yep.
But watching enough line play and seeing how that develops and why, like, mm-hmm. you kind of, you know to pick up things when a guy's falling a certain way and then yep. you just don't. And when I saw that, I was like, I turned around immediately because seeing yep. him on the ground with his leg at
yep.
at a 90 degree angle,
yep.
I was like, that's not something I ever yep. want to see again in my life. And I yep. can't believe that was the wildest thing I ever saw live.
Yeah, that was rough.
Mm,
that was such a weird game too. Like, just sudden, like, it was close, and then suddenly it's a 30-point game. That was a weird one. Okay, we're way behind because we're supposed to be yes. talking. We're supposed to be talking about football recruiting.
This is a great insight into our emails, DM, whatever yes. our conversations are. It just turns into, like,
that's right.
an aggregation of too many words at some point.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. Okay, so we want to talk in the second half of this podcast about the current state of football recruiting. So, let's start with kind of an overview. I'll ask you this question. What are your thoughts on the focus on in-state? Like, the, you know, it seems like that's, you know, from, you know, look at the names in the class, look at the high schools in the class, look at the everything that's been said from day one when Bielma took over. It has been like, we're going to build this based on Illinois as a concept. What do you think of that?
So I think it's a good concept in theory. Now, in the latter portion of the Love years, I honestly was a defender of him not going to the in-state well, because when you are, and I don't mean to get into this whole debate, but it's just, I didn't see the allure of if the high school head coaches had given up on him, or he had, you know, summarily broke whatever relationship or ties, or wasn't investing his you know, efforts into that like he should have been, then at that point you just need to rely on whatever connections and go to states that you can get a guy who, it's about efficiency at that point, in my opinion. So, like, if it takes you 30 hours in a week to get a kid who's the 80th ranked player and at his position in Florida versus, you know, 45 hours for getting a 30th ranked kid
yeah.
in Illinois or something like that. Like, yeah. I didn't see the necessary effort in that. And I was just like, okay, he's trying to be as efficient as possible. Go to Florida, go to Texas, go to some of the, even a little bit of Georgia or California, depending on who his staff was. Like, I get it. I think that you still need to fill out classes with that kind of talent. I'm loving that they're getting into New Jersey with this new regime, because that's another, like, Ohio, New Jersey.
Yep.
Those are ones that consistently produce great football talent.
Yep.
But as like the in-state thing goes, if you're not consistently getting top 15, top 20 guys, at least a handful of them every single year, it's not quite the strategy. Like, you're going to be able to fill out your roster with some dependable guys who are going to be good football players and can play special teams and maybe turn into some developmental pieces their junior and senior years. But there, unless you're getting, you know, maybe one guy in the top five every single year, and somehow that's like your strategy, yeah, like just going for broke on one in-state guy and then filling it out elsewhere.
Yeah.
Like, you're probably not going to be doing the greatest if it's just like, oh yeah, we're taking seven kids that are in the 22 to 35 range of whatever rankings you use. Like, that's just, it's good as a selling point, and hopefully when you develop some of those kids and or you just start winning, then it turns into better recruiting and you just stay on that trail. But I don't know if it's necessarily the be-all end-all of this is how our brand is going to be, this is how we're going to build a winner. It could be if you can turn around some wins really quickly and gain some momentum with in-state, like, you know, coaches and whatnot and whatever connections that you need to maintain. But I think they got to see it first before they're going to be like, oh yeah, we're going to send top flight state to Illinois, or try and help get top flight state to Illinois.
Yeah. I feel like that's, I feel like we could, and this is no, this is not to dog the class at all or anything. I feel like we could have predicted that the top 10 guys in the state probably weren't going to, like, you have to do something first. Or you have to have something or prove something. Yes, there's anywhere but Illinois. There's ABI. And that's always going to, like, guys like Caleb Brown, Tyler Morris, I don't even consider that Illinois would, like, that's going to be a Michigan and Ohio State for a long, long time. That would, you know, occasionally you can get a Martez Wilson and, you know, whatever. But, like, you know, these top 100 guys, I don't even think in terms of, like, you know, maybe on the second round come back through.
Exactly. And, yeah.
You know, you think
it's always going to be Ohio State and Michigan and Notre Dame or an SEC school. Like, that's how it's going to be for the top like five kids in the state. And maybe unless you have some kind of connection, then you get that through. But
so that's why, like, Austin Brown and Danny McGuire were like the guys that's like, okay, here is where you're. Those other guys, fine. They're, you know, Luther Burden's going to Oklahoma. You know, Morris. Those guys are all going to stay with the
Blue Bloods. Jaleel going to Alabama.
Yes.
Catching passes in the national championship. And me just being like, oh, wow. Like,
yes.
Yeah, so maybe he was right in terms of going to to the best offer.
Right. But then in that 6 to 10 range, if we look at just the current composite rankings, 6 is Austin Brown. He goes and picks Wisconsin. That one hurt.
That one really hurt.
We need safeties. He would start next year as a true freshman. Hands down would start. But would rather go 3 years at Wisconsin. But I won't say that out loud. You know.
Yeah, no one listens to this.
Yes, that's right. Danny McGuire goes Northwestern.
That one hurt. Bostic just because it
goes,
like,
Iowa.
Yeah.
Rashad Rochelle, he had picked Rutgers last year, so that's not he committed, what, in November? It was
kind of weird how early he committed.
Yeah.
Because it just seemed like a guy who would be a U of I boy, and then...
Right.
All right.
Right down the road in Springfield. Right.
Yeah.
And then currently, the number 10 guy is Petrucci? Really? Is that recent jump or something? I didn't know he was 10th in the state in Northwestern has 5, 7, and 10. I kind of hate that, but whatever.
Yeah, they're very sneaky. But, like, that's what I honestly think that, like, we should, like, I don't want to say we should ever hope to be like Northwestern, but if there was a hypothetical universe where we could be doing something similar, which is sneaky, oh yeah, they have 3 to 5 of the top 15 players every single year in their class in the state.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, I think that's the range we need to live in, is beating Wisconsin for Brown or beating Iowa for Bostic. Like, that just has to be, like, that's where the corner starts to turn, is in there. I'm not planning to, you know, I don't think until it's built we could look at a Tyler Morris and say, hey, son, come here. You know, he's going to have these offers. He's top 100. he's going to do the Michigan thing or the Ohio State thing. That's fine, whatever. Even Sebastian Cheeks, like, he's going to be Notre Dame or Texas or whatever. And, you know, okay, mm-hmm. fine. Deal with it, you know, he's even in Evanston and North, you know, he's not even considered Northwestern. Those guys are mm-hmm. always going to do the whole, you know, I'm picking between one of 12 schools and that's fine. I'm not even trying to do that. Like, nope. our plan recruiting wise needs to be hitting that next tier. That's why Brown hurts so much for me, because exactly. it's like, man, that could have been that, like, look, we can do this. We can land this
kid immediately. Yes. Competitive and yes. recruiting. That yes. would have been huge. And right. I think that capacity is there with the staff, yep. you know, even if it's not as constructed, because, you yep. know, I think we all think pretty highly and that dudes are going to move elsewhere. But I think Bielema has his ship tight enough that, you know, it's going to be something where the infrastructure as like an effort for the staff is there to get those guys. Like, yep. I think they were, you know, close with guys like Brown and Bostic.
Yep.
But it's just, you know, you need to have wins and you need to be able to sell some kind of plan. And
yep.
they obviously don't have that. So,
yeah. And the further we get from, I mean, even the Rose Bowl, or, you know, the further we get from anything of relevance, it gets harder and harder and harder until you can just prove that, you know, that you are, that you can be. I mean, you know, I totally get why Austin Brown would be like, yeah, Wisconsin football, like, you know, he'll play
Jim
in front
Leonard.
Of, yes, he'll play in front of 80,000 people and we're going to have 37,000. And until we win, that's fine. You know, Wisconsin average attendance, I yell this all the time, was 40,000 people in 1990. They had 30 years with like 8 winning seasons total or something like that. So, you know, they didn't, they just built it. And then they started recruiting well. So,
I'm not going to lie. I'm ready for Wisconsin to be bad again in the revenue generating sports. I know this is a hot take, but I think it's time for them to be bad again, to go back to where they were in that place. Because even like with the basketball, like the rumblings and whatnot, mm-hmm. and maybe them being on the downswing, and then you get like, I don't know, somehow sneaky, just usurp them or get a yep. couple teams to kick them to the middle of the Big Ten West and they just hit that
yep.
that cliff and fall off. I'm here for it.
Yes. I mean, everybody, look, Texas has been 10 years trying to get it back. You know, Texas looked, you know, unstoppable in 2006 or whatever. And now they're 10, you know, Tennessee is 15 years into trying to get it back. It doesn't just come back and everybody falls at some point. So yes, at some point, Wisconsin's going to have a 4-8 season and be like, wait, what? Whoa, that was weird. Yeah. Because everybody does it. Look at Florida State right now. You know, that would be impossible to suggest to somebody that they would be like the 60th best team in college football. Just impossible to suggest that.
Yeah, 2 years after winning a national championship game, it was like, I think we need to fire our head coach. Like, imagine a world in which like that, and that's just, you know, college football being in the highest of stakes and,
yep.
you know, all the politics possible and all that good jazz. But it's just,
yep.
yeah, but the one thing is the Big Ten West is built for like consistency. Like, it's a pretty high floor,
yep.
low ceiling division
yep.
that if you can get your footing in, if you're an Iowa or Wisconsin or Northwestern, then you might be able to fluke your way into, you know, a playoff if they keep expanding them, which is my hope as an Illini fan. I know that
yep.
in your article, when you were talking about the expansion of the playoff, and it's not that your like dream died, but you just weren't ever really thinking about that. See, for me, it's like, okay, we get lucky one of those years and we do. I mean, Michigan State
yep.
was in the college football playoff.
Yes.
Like, yes, I know it took
yes.
a certain set of circumstances, but yeah, somehow you get lucky and some dudes do some stupid stuff for the Big Ten East team to be named when we're in the Big Ten championship game. And then you somehow find yourself in a playoff, or if there's enough teams and because, you know, you had a great record, like now it's like, okay, we just need to find someone who can develop enough that then we can sneak our way up. And then you start recruiting from there. And then you start turning into, we got now 3 of the top 7 guys in the state, and then boom,
yeah, yep.
we're rocking.
Yep. Okay, so this is the portion of the program, God, I'm going to love this, where, okay, so I don't listen to or read or, so I'm on an island in the things I research and study. I don't want to read what other people have to say. I don't want other opinions in my head. I don't listen to anything. So as a result, whenever I discuss a recruiting class for the first time, I don't know how to pronounce anyone's name.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? I don't know if the offensive lineman from New Jersey is Matt Fries or Matt Fries.
It's Fries.
I don't know if it's Jared Beatty or Jared Batty.
True. Same here. Don't know. Is it Wittenack? Whitenack?
Yes. I don't know.
Mr. Snack?
I don't know. You tell me. Is it really Fries?
It is Fries. But that's just because I was... So for my little bit of research, I was looking at his brother, and there were enough, you know, videos of him getting interviewed and whatnot that they were saying Will Fries. So
yeah, I used to use that. I would just go to YouTube and search for Matt Fries interview, and then it would be some high school site interviewing him on the track after a high school game, and they would say, "We're here with Matt Fries," but. Then one of those led me wrong. I can't remember. It was some Illinois player.
Oh, yeah.
And they pronounced his name wrong. And so then I started using that, and it was like, oh, it was wrong the whole time. So I can't even trust that.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. So yeah. we're going with Beatty. We're going to go with Beatty.
Okay? Beatty, okay. I like that.
Ian Pugh? Ian Pugh?
Ian. It's got to be Ian, right?
Mm-hmm. But the E-I throws me off. It could be Ian.
It does. It could be.
Yes.
I just... Mm-hmm. Ian Pug?
Mm-hmm. Whitenack. Are we going to go with Whitenack for now?
I feel like it's got to be Whitenack. Okay. That's just like Occam's razor. It's got to be
yes,
Whitenack.
Yes. So we're going with Fries. Hank Beatty.
Yeah, that's another one I'm like, Beatty. I like it. That's probably when people see my name. They're like, Dallas?
Uh-huh.
I'm just like, Hank Beatty.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Hank Restaurant.
Uh-huh. And then I'm pretty sure it's Joey Okla. But there's a chance it could be Okla. It could be. Who knows? Okay. So,
the fun thing is, you get to interview these guys. I can just sit here in my set of ignorance and be like, oh, yeah, these guys, they'll never know me.
Well, hello there, Ian Pugya. Tell me about you. Okay. So, overall impressions, your thoughts on how many are in the class now? 13. So, your thoughts, we're probably only going to bring in. 18 high schoolers and then some transfers, maybe 17.
I was gonna say like 4 or 5 more.
Yeah, maybe four more.
And they gotta all be on defense, right? Like there's no shot. Like unless they get one of these top flight offensive linemen who I don't think are gonna pick us, but
yep. Now this is the other thing, that I discovered today. So I did my depth chart today.
Mm-hmm.
Did you read that?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
You got to understand, I'm refreshing IB all the time. It's funny because
you could say it.
Your rapid fire is not quite there. Like you're not like some content, you know, you're
quality. You mean I'm on a train in the middle of nowhere posting nothing for 4 days?
I check IB probably I don't know.
People have told me this before. It's like, do you do this to yourself? Do you think I'm just going to suddenly wake up one day? I mean, I posted three things in the last 6 hours.
It's because and then there's going to be nothing for it makes me so happy because I just know that there's going to be no. It's going to be the same picture for this for 2 days. I know it's going to be there, and then when it's not, I'm like, yes, let's go. This is incredible.
See, and then that's the thing is I've been putting all these 90 Illini things down below, so. It's like
you understand how happened. Like Dan and I were talking about that. Like we were playing video games. We're playing video games, and of course, something comes up with the 90 eye.
Yep.
And I'm scrolling because I'm trying to find what we're talking about, some talking point. Mm-hmm. And then I'm scrolling to find the post that we were referencing, in the 70s or 80s or whatever it is, because we had 25 people transfer.
Yep.
And then I realized there's a treasure trove of people that I haven't. I was like, wait, Caron Taylor was just up on the top page, and now all of a sudden he's not there anymore. But there are people after him. What's going on? Uh-huh. This is amazing.
Yeah. Yes. I've been experimenting with how to put things because I just hate it when the whole front of the site it's just like oh, here's the this is the 90 Illini site. Like if I wrote something about basketball, I want people to be able to see it. That's the thing people are going to care about more than who's the 67th most important Illini football player for this fall.
So, yeah, get like a tab, like a drop down.
Yes.
To just the 90i or something like that. That just is there year long and it updates or something like that.
Oh, it's on the list. If you could only see the list of things that, you know.
At our next corporate retreat, I'm sure I'll get some insight into that.
Yes, we wait for that invite. So overall with this class, the thing I discovered is, so I was filling out my depth chart and we only have 8 guys for those 3 interior defensive line spots, which I'm calling left end, right end, and nose tackle. Mm-hmm. There'll be different kind of packages. They'll probably use a 3 technique kind of a tackle at times, and they might, you know, whatever. But for those 3 positions, there's only 8 guys. 2 of them are seniors, like last year of eligibility. 2 more are could come back using their COVID bonus year, and that's Pate mm-hmm. and Avery. And so, but if Pate and Avery are gone after this season, if they just graduate and go or whatever, we have 4 defensive linemen for those 3 spots on the entire roster. And then no commits that would, I mean, they're not going to move any of these offensive linemen there.
I was going to say, maybe we can try our hand at the 90 tight ends on the roster. Just, all right. So
right.
This year,
and now let's go back to defensive line. Yes.
Now you get to play nose tackle.
Yes. Hey, Cooper Davis, we kind of need you. I mean, I guess you could put Virtus back there. That's a thought. But point being is we have 13 people in the class. Probably going to only add 3 or 4 more high schoolers and then some transfers. And they'll need at least 3 interior defensive linemen, at least.
Oh, yeah.
If not, because
you definitely
4.
Need, because they have no one who's like a definite hand on the ground commit right now. Definitely
yes.
not.
I mean,
and you need like Johnny Newton and Keith Randolph are perfect for the defensive end structure here.
Yes. In like, a sense, you have those 3, those 2 guys for 4 years. So you're okay. You find a nose tackle. Maybe McCoy can be that guy after Perry, after Avery. And, you know, maybe they're just happy with it. And they're like, okay, we've got, for the defense we run a run, we've got the guys and we've got them here at least 3 years. And so, you know, maybe that makes it easier on them. But, you know, I look at cornerback. You know, they had 5 here. They just added 4 more in this class. So they've got 9 guys for 2 spots. And then mm-hmm. we're going to have 6 guys for 3 spots in another part of the depth chart next year. So you have 9 cornerbacks to play for 2 open spots on the field. And then you'll have 6 defensive linemen for 3 open spots on the field. So, yes, there are defensive linemen coming at some point. Hopefully
there has to be, right?
Yes.
Right.
Maybe, that's why I was surprised to see Riggins go.
Yeah.
Maybe they love said McConnell. I mean, maybe they're just like, hey, we've got, maybe they like Pate. Like, hey, Pate's got 2 more years on him. And, you know, maybe
they trust themselves to find potential productive guys in the transfer portal.
Yep.
But I don't know. It's that, yeah, that's and it's interesting too. Cause like even talking about cornerbacks, like that's a super intriguing spot because obviously with us not knowing the intricacies of the scheme, because that's like, you know, that's how recruiting right. obviously starts. It's like
yep.
you figure out your schemes and then you recruit from there. Or that's how it should be at least.
Yep.
And then, you know, how are they going to deploy their corners? I mean, obviously it's not going to be a Tampa 2 shell where you're going to have these guys pressing and sitting in zones. And you might, I don't know what it's going to be exactly in terms of what Walter's going to do, but it could suit some guys better than others. And you might have a bunch of those guys who are pegged to be corners go to safety or transfer out or something like that. And then,
yep.
next year it's like, okay, you know, we suddenly have 0 corners now, so we need to plug that depth. So it's yep. very interesting, and I'm intrigued to see how they attack, because they definitely need more defensive tackles especially defensive tackles, maybe guys who could be, you know, 3 techs or 5 techs, but you need some interior D tackles
yep.
for sure.
Yep. I mean, you could if you had to. So you've got Ezekiel Holmes out there, sophomore, he's at outside linebacker right now playing at 240. You could get him to Keith Randolph size and put him as an end there. Like you mm-hmm. you have some, like even Bryce Barnes is now listed as an outside backer, so he went tight end, defensive tackle, outside linebacker, first time in NCAA football history. And you know, so you have guys that you could bulk up and make them an end. They don't have to be a defensive they don't have to be Avery to go in there, but I just still mm-hmm. feel like at least 2 guys are coming, at least 3, I mean, like at least 3 probably three transfers on the defensive line, maybe something like that.
And you hope that they're mass movers too.
Yes. And who's your you lose both Gay and Kearney, and yes, you got Seth Coleman there, but okay, they probably need some outside linebackers. Who? Yeah, are we just going to see the rest of the class be outside backers and defensive linemen? Like,
yeah, and then we need safeties. Like,
yep.
And yep. So it's one of those where I'm intrigued to see how they attack it, because they had a very effective plan, we'll say, in terms, or a very, effective in terms of execution.
Yes.
Getting their offensive targets on board. Like, they had a plan. They said, we're going to fill it out with X amount of guys at these positions, and they took care of it. I don't know what the plan is exactly on the defensive side of the ball, if they're going to maybe not wait and see, but maybe slow play it a little bit more, because they don't know exactly how they're going to deploy their scheme or what Walters is exactly looking for. But at the same time, like, I mean, maybe they just think that they, because whenever you overhaul a scheme change like that, like for people who listen to the Field Pass, and I'm sure many of that people who are listening now are, but we've had the privilege, obviously, of close personal friend Jake Hansen being on the podcast twice.
Yep.
Him talking about how there wasn't this past time, talking about how, yeah, it's just, you know, changing out, like, the coverages don't really change. Like, it's just changing up language. Yep. At the same time, like, you need, like, different dudes for different, like, outside linebacker is not something where you can be a hand in the ground guy. And then, so there's going to be a dramatic change. And I think that they might just go to the portal for all that. Like, there's always dudes from, you know, Clemson or Bama or Texas that, you know, try their hand at being a year or two there and then fall off. And maybe we can pick them up off the scrap heap and be like, hey, come play outside linebacker for us and be a productive player.
Yeah. I don't know. So you think Beatty is going to be an outside?
He's got to be.
Yes. Yeah.
He's like Seth Coleman in that sense of, like, these perfectly long, like, they're not tweeners because they're too long. So they're perfect for that kind of stand up rusher. So he's going to be, I think, really nice in terms of.
What do you
of,
think, Hood? Do you think he's inside or outside?
I think he's going to be inside.
Yeah.
Just because of the.
Yeah.
Like, he's got to be a thumper.
Yeah. He's.
Even though
He's probably closer to safety than he is to outside backer, like, on the continuum. So if they have one outside, you're right. Like the offensive line class made no sense to me at first, because it's like, okay, we have 19 right now. Sure, you lose five, but we're going to add four more. Then you see Sparks depart, Griffin departs, Tyler departs.
That made me
Jones,
sad.
What's that?
The Kevin Tyler one.
Yes,
that one. I was like, I love. Once again, this goes back to my dad being an offensive lineman, but I love guys like just massive dudes who can when you can run the ball, you're just like, oh yeah, put a bunch of dudes who are 6'4", 320 on the line, and then just move people. Just do it. Just move people.
Yep.
And I was like, Kevin Tyler, put him on left or right guard, and just. And so I was sad to see him go, but like. It didn't quite make sense, because I feel like he could carve out a niche in this offense. Whereas a guy like Brevin Jones, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. He was like pretty light, probably.
Yep. And that's not what they want is for their tackles. And it makes sense. But yeah, so now I guess I get the offensive line recruiting that they feel they need to go heavy in this class. Still no safety. Unless they think like Keontae Curry's a safety, unless they think like, I don't know, like some of these Tyler Strain's a safety. He's too short for safety. Like maybe they
Snyder,
think,
maybe Prince Green. Like,
yeah, maybe
you think that a couple of those guys are.
Yeah. If Prince Green is a free safety, then that makes it look a little different, but still, you know, that's why Brown was just like the super target. Like, he fits, he's the position you need. He's in state, he's down state. He's not Chicago. That's why that one hurts, because it was just like everything we needed. That kind of athlete in the back of a defense. Yeah. Okay, we're not going to lament that anymore.
Yeah, quick question. So, like, what are your thoughts? So, obviously, the staff put the Fulker press. Like, you know, they went to Johnson City for the dead period. Like, they seemingly, obviously, they can't control where a kid goes, but you try and influence as much as you can. Like, is that something where if in 3 to 4 years we're not seeing Bielema and the – you know, Illini bus going to Bumbletown City, Illinois. Yeah. Like, is that something that concerns you, where you're just like, or do you trust enough? Like, do you think that that is something that's going to be a constant, or do you think it even matters that much? Like that's something where I'm like, okay, this is a marked difference from the other staff, but is it the most efficient use of their time?
Right. I mean, that trip.
I mean, yeah, that's got to happen.
Yes.
Like, because it's a dead period. So like, yes. More so just in terms of like the full court pressing it. And we're in the middle of a pandemic, so it's like hard to get.
Yep. Because normally they would all be on the road April 15th to May 31st. They would be hitting every high school. Like, Bielema can't go on the road. Like, head coaches can't recruit, which was the thing that it was the Lovey call out that bothered me more than like. Like I responded to like 30 of them on Twitter until I just gave up of like, oh, look at the assistant coaches out on the road in April. What is Lovey doing? He's sitting at home. He can't. Like, I understand and I understand, but head coaches are not allowed on the road anymore. Not until the winter.
I want my coach to commit recruiting violations.
Yes. Like, it's always, so let me preach again. Next spring when this happens, nobody get on Bielema for not being out on the road. He can't be. Only the assistants can go out April 15th to May 31st. He won't be able to. But so yes, I think we're going to see this. He's preaching Illinois. He's saying I was born in Illini Hospital. He's saying I'm going to recruit Illinois kids. Wisconsin did it. Iowa does it. You know, we need to be that. We need to have those kids wanting to come here. I have my skepticism about how much talent the state produces. There's a lot of 4-stars on lists, but if you go through the NFL draft recently, there's kids from Illinois getting drafted, but it's the Corey Davises who, was it Davis? Well, kids who go to Michigan State or, go to Western Michigan or, the 19th best player in the state went to Iowa and then he got drafted or whatever. You know, it hasn't, the 4-stars haven't really produced in Illinois over the last decade. It's not a state like Ohio. It's not been a state like whatever. But there have been, Illinois is still, 9th or something in NFL players or however it is. So it's still a thing. And it's going to take some good scouting and everything else. So I'm still a little skeptical. It can't be. It's better than Iowa. It's better than Wisconsin. So you can do something. I'm skeptical Chicago will ever care about Illinois.
You need to be winning a lot to do that.
Yeah. And so then you have to dominate downstate. And, that's possible and start to win. And it's more possible.
And you help. Like, it's kind of like the not only it's not only helping your program, but then in terms of me speaking into like Wisconsin could then turn into a not so bueno program if you get a bunch of those recruits that usually it's like, oh yeah, this random kid from like the Western Illinois region just ships up to Wisconsin and becomes a 3-year starter and is all team second team all Big Ten or something like that. Like, he could have been perfect for Illinois. Like, that's something where if you start winning those battles, yes, I know it's, you got to find those guys, but it's one of those where you got to be able to take that talent that is Power 5 and get it to commit to Illinois.
Yeah. And you have to find, you have to scout like Iowa has scouted for 20 years. That has to be part of it. And so I'll tell you a little story. It's kind of funny, not that funny with how it turned out.
It's not a good way to start. This is going to be the funniest story Robert ever tells on this podcast right here.
But it's kind of painful. I grew up down by St. Louis in Highland, Illinois. Highland really never produced any football players ever. There was a kid a year older than me who went to Northwestern in 1990, and then I don't think there was a single Division I recruit until Tanner Farmer went to Nebraska in like 13 or whatever. Anyway, Highland had some good teams a few years ago. And I'm visiting a friend of mine. He has twin sons, and the twin sons are saying, "Hey, is Illinois going to recruit Sam Laporta from Highland?" And I'm like, "Guys, you got to understand what college football recruiting is. Like, he doesn't really have. He has a few offers from a few tiny schools, but it's just he can be really good in high school." I'm talking down to these 10-year-olds, he can be really good in high school, but it takes a really, really, really good player you know, to go to Illinois. And then, so he's probably, you know, I think he was leaning toward Miami of Ohio or something. And then Iowa offers like a week before signing day. He signs at Iowa. Now he's going to be the next great Iowa tight end. He's going to have like 7 touchdowns against us the next 2 years. And it's like, you know, I look forward to talking to these now.
You're right. This isn't funny. I'm so sad.
Talking to these now 12-year-olds of like, hey, I thought you said Sam LaPorta wouldn't be any good in college. Well, son, I did say that. And you as a 10-year-old had a much better view of this than I did. Because
he also has the benefit of going up against the Illinois defense every single year because those linebackers are going to sit at 7 yards, and as long as he can get behind him, which is, oh, man.
So whatever.
I mean, we're not talking season, but I'm so excited to see some competence on the defensive side in terms of just different things. But that's neither here nor there. We're talking recruiting.
Yes. So my point being there is, like, I feel like the single biggest thing this staff needs to do is find that Iowa formula, that Iowa is sweeping through all available players in January after early signing day, and they find some kid in Highland, Illinois, who, you know, becomes their next great tight end. And, you know, I don't want to overhype the kid, but I mean, there's a chance he's the best tight end in the Big Ten in a few years, or even if next year, or even if this year. And so it's like, you know, whatever that formula is to whatever staff they have to say, hey, Nick Neiman's going to be a good college linebacker, to, you know, to whatever they do to figure these things out, we need to do that. You know, it needs to be not only, yes, we got a Austin Brown, we got to beat Iowa for Bostic, we got to beat
Northwestern for McGuire.
Yes. We have to beat the Big Ten West foes for these Illinois kids. You're not going to win the Star game. We've been over that. But we also have to discover, you know, and maybe Clayton Leonard is a future, who knows if that's happening, you know. Here I'm having the same view, and I'm giving people 1.5 cruises.
Yeah.
And maybe this staff does have an eye for that. But, you know, that's, I feel like that is the moment where this all turns around. Like, if we can figure out that formula that Wisconsin has done, that Northwestern has done, that Iowa has done, that they not only pick up those players in the Pew Okla range of, like, you know, a lot of Power Five offers, if you can find those guys, but you can also find the Sam LaPorta and say, hey, I think the next great tight end is down there and he's going to go to a MAC school. Let's bring him in.
Mm-hmm. Or even something like Jordan Anderson, you know, in a couple years,
right,
when we're at the Thanksgiving games are a little bit more, the student sections are a little bit more full because we're winning ball games and it's, you know, pretty cold, but it doesn't matter because Jordan Anderson's falling forward for 5.5 yards a carry. And we're just like, wow, Robert's big running back bias was just so wrong.
Oh, wait.
Because we found Jordan.
Wait, Jordan Anderson, there's my defensive tackle. Sorry. I just.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm worried about.
6'3", 215. He could put 60 pounds on that
McCray
frame.
McCray will be the nose tackle. I don't know what I'm even scared of at this point.
Exactly. We've solved it.
Yes.
Speaking of switching positions, I am so excited. When you were talking in your Henry Boyer article, the Looks Like University of Illinois, I am so excited for, like, doing that aspect of recruiting tight ends, being like, hey, so you're going to be an inline tight end, but if we put 50 pounds on you and you're still moving just as fast, you could be a sixth round draft pick. And he, like, fits that to it. And I'm so excited to be in that realm, because maybe he does turn out to be a very productive tight end or something like that.
Yes.
But him potentially being like, it's like, wow, we have a lot of potentially interior offensive linemen in this class. Like, I don't really know where the true, like, tackle's coming from. It's like, oh, but then you get Henry Boyer and you put some put some meat on that man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we have that is one theme from this class that we've probably not done before, is the Swiss Army knife, jumbo athlete like Boyer, like Owen Anderson, of maybe he's Fred Wakefield, he ends up a defensive end, and maybe he's Ken Dilger, he ends up a tight end or whatever, but, you know, it's the jumbo athlete that you can take like a John Davis and say, is he this or is he that, or maybe he's this. And you know, we just haven't done that in a while. It's like the, you know, I've used this example before. Remember the pens? God, you're probably too young. The pens that had the little clicker on the end for like you would push the one thing down, it would be a red pen.
Four different colors?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And you pop them the two sides and it popped up.
Never worked. And then like the you'd press down to write in red.
You'd unscrew it so you could push off for it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that's how I view some of these recruits. Like when I look at Jordan Anderson, yeah, he might be a tailback, but I think, you know, you could use him as an outside backer. You know, he's got that big frame that, you know, same thing with Boyer, same thing with Anderson. Like you have, or, you know, Owen Anderson, maybe you slide down the defensive end and maybe you slide down the outside linebacker. Maybe
reverse Cooper
maybe
Davis,
he goes up to offensive lineman. You know, maybe he stays slim and goes, you know, that we just haven't really done that. We've recruited big guys for offensive line and we've recruited, you know, we did recruit, you know, Beckman liked the concept of like, you know, Christian Dillard was a high school tight end. You know, Austin Schmidt was you know, that same kind of like 250 pounds in high school, and they decided to add 60 pounds to him. So there has been some of that, but there hasn't been this kind of like just recruit a whole bunch of tight ends or really big running backs and then just figure it all out later, you know, that kind of thing. We just haven't done that, and that'll be interesting to watch. You know, we saw it with Cooper Davis. You know, Cooper Davis is like, hey, they liked you I think I like you over here, you know, that kind of thing. Like those, we just haven't had jumbo guys like that in a while.
Yep. That's definitely going to be a breath of fresh air when it's like, oh yeah, Henry Boyer starting left tackle for once Moses Okpala or Julian Pearl. Because I know on your depth chart you have Okpala, but I think if they don't do the, I know you, me, and Carmen have talked about it.
Right.
And if they don't do the kick Paulcho inside and put Pearl at right tackle, if they slot him as a left tackle, then maybe he's there and Moses is the right tackle, or it's the other way around. Yeah. But whenever that situation ends, and maybe it's Henry Boyer who's, you know, third in line to take over, and that's exciting.
Remind me where you came down. So I am, in that group text with Carmen, I am...
which is our football safe space.
Yes. I am, what if Jarisotti's the best offensive lineman on the line? Let's just think of it. Let's everybody just consider that. Mm-hmm. As you said, I have spoken it into existence. Carmen is, Paulcho was at his best at left guard in 2017, and he should go back there, especially after the knee injury. And then we start Pearl, which kicks my boy Jarisotti somewhere. He wants to move Jarisotti to right guard and then put Pilstrom on the bench, but whatever. Where do you come down on that whole debate? Or do you want Virtus in there clearing people out?
So I think Pearl acquitted himself so well last year. And you don't find... Like, it's hard to find guys like that at tackle. Not that Paulcho can't be that guy, but if he's playing at the next level, it's going to be as an interior lineman.
Yeah.
And so if you get him at guard, and this is, it's more of, I don't know, the Pilstrom, like they might love him. I don't know if that's more of an indictment on Virtus or if it's just them loving Pilstrom and this is a moot point by me, but I think that guard spot is up for grabs. And if you want the best five out there, then you get, and even in 2019, like when they had a couple of those jumbo packages where they put Vedarian and Paulcho next to each other.
Yep.
And I was just like, this is incredible. Like this just makes me want to like go hit someone because we're inside the five and you got those two guys next to each other. And we're direct snapping into someone, which is kind of weird, but whatever. Like get those two next to each other. Yeah. I guess you might have to move, and Jarisotti is going to be a left guard, but I just would like to see Pearl starting because I think that what he does to help elevate the team could be better than what a Pilstrom or Virtus does because you're not really losing that, like there's no replacement level loss from moving Paulcho back inside and might almost be more beneficial, especially a dude coming off an ACL injury.
Yeah.
Like I know that, you know, medical science is great nowadays and guys are coming back quicker than ever, but that those first couple times he kicks slides, like,
yep.
Is it going to be as good as he was? Like,
yep.
You're on an island as a tackle. Like, yep. That's just, you can mask more deficiencies or inefficiencies like he might have because of a lingering knee thing that, you know, he's trying to push through to get his NFL stock up. So slot him inside. But then again, he's, you know, been on that island for the past
yep.
4 years. So,
yeah. So if you had to pick between
a lot of words, to tell you, I want, I think Paucho inside and Pearl on.
Okay.
On the
so
right
if
side.
You had to pick between Carmen's line and my line, Carmen's line is the Darian Paucho, Kramer, Gerasotti, Pearl. My line is, as you see it right now, you know, as you saw in the spring game, Lowe, Gerasotti, Kramer, Pilstrom, and Paucho. It was Pearl in the spring game, but Paucho was injured. Which of those you're going to take Carmen line, which I'm okay with. You're not going to hurt my feelings.
No, I definitely skew more towards that in terms of my line of thinking for how they fit. I just want the five biggest, baddest dudes out there. And that's, like I said, Pilstrom might go out there and be, you know, surprising, get some all Big Ten votes or something like that. I don't know what it, I trust Bart Miller. He's my favorite hire on the staff. But at the same time, in terms of my novice eyes, I really like what Pearl did last year and how he stepped in. And for a guy who was a basketball player and then a defensive end coming in and showing that well, that's something where I'm not going to say. So like with Isaiah, it's, you know, you hope that the comp was like Kyler Murray, but you could kind of tell, like, when you get thrown in, this guy could still be he set the school record for most amount of rushing yards in a game by a quarterback. Like, that's not to say he couldn't have been very good, but it wasn't going to be like, oh, this is the next coming of Baker Mayfield or Kyler Murray or something like that.
Right.
Some guys you can just tell when they get thrown in immediately in that kind of situation. And Pearl, the reason I bring that up is because he came in and did so well after being a guy who wasn't, you know,
yep.
bred to be an offensive tackle, yep. and he's doing that well. Then I think that there's some credence that you got to put into the head and let him keep riding. But that's just me riding the hot hand. Johnny Frontrunner.
Okay, I'm going to throw out another question for you. First play against Nebraska. Let's say Nebraska gets the opening kickoff. Obviously, they go 3-and-out with our new defense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They punt.
Blitz them on third and 16 and
yes,
sack them.
Yes. Donnie returns the punt 11 yards to the 44. It is first and 10. I'm going to present two scenarios to you. They come out heavy, three tight ends. They've got Barker, Ford, and Tip Ryman are the three. No, Max Rosenthal is the H-back because he's there to block.
Mm-hmm.
Chase Brown, they're heavy. You just know they're gonna try and ground and pound on first down. Or they come out Isaiah and Jafar Armstrong, double slot receivers. You've got Donnie and Hightower on the outside, and you kind of surprise everybody because you're just going to get this speed out there, and you're gonna do that. Which do you get more excited about? Which of those sets? Which would you prefer to see? First and 10
boy.
Against Nebraska from the 44 after Donnie's punt return.
Robert, the amount of thought that I've given this, it's, I'm, I hate
you
to
might have thought
it,
you will
there.
Give this the next 2.5 hours.
Yeah. Buckle in, guys. Cause we're not even halfway. No. So, okay. Punt gets returned. Donnie tries to take it to the left sideline. You got it on that left hash. Mm-hmm. What I'm doing is we're going heavy left. So we're going forward in line and then Barker on his hip. Peters under center, Chase Brown single back, and then Isaiah in the slot and Hightower split out.
Okay.
That's what I'm looking for. If you wanted to get real weird with it, you go jumbo
mm-hmm.
with three tight ends.
Mm-hmm.
You put in seeing your Freudian slip. I'll take that to the bank and say Ryman hand on the line on if we're staying left hash. Mm-hmm. So Ryman on the left, mm-hmm. Ford and Barker on the right.
Okay.
And then Isaiah in the slot on to the left. So you don't even have a split out. Okay. You're just like, okay, we're going back to the 1940s
yes,
playing football.
Yes. The cornerbacks are looking around at their coach saying, coach, what am I supposed to do?
Exactly.
They don't have anybody.
But here's what you do, because then you get Isaiah motioning through the backfield.
Yep.
He does like that fake jet, and then you work some kind of rollout with Brandon Peters, and you get Tip running a post, and then you've got Ford as the big body in the middle, and Barker's leaking out, and Isaiah already up the sideline because he's gotten a head start. Like, so I want, as alluring as it seems to have Jafar and Isaiah and Donnie and Hightower out there, and hell's bells, let's even Chase Brown, no Moss, we're gonna put in our guy Owen Hickey, and he's getting that that starting
spider represent.
Yep. I mean, I gotta do it for me and Carmen. But no, in all seriousness, like, say you go like Desmond Dan or Kamari Thompson gets out there, and for some, because you know, Nebraska's doing the same thing we're doing in terms of positing that with, you know, the way that they're offering kids and their reason, you know, they're going to come out heavy. And then we show up with 5-wide and they're like, what's going on?
Remember, the first play of the spring game was 5-wide.
Exactly.
Chase Brown's out, Barker's out, and 5-wide.
Yeah, so maybe they do something like that. And as much as that would kind of make me happy, because I like seeing, like, as you need speed in your offense, you need to be able to go sideline to sideline, because it is north and south. You don't want to be, you know, I've got my dad in my head whenever guys are tippy-toeing around and trying to, you know, juke. But at the same time, you need that lateral speed so that you can get up the field, because that's just how the game is played nowadays. But at the same time, I think that they could use the weapons that they have with a guy like Isaiah, or even, you know, sparingly putting in Jafar or whatever their plan is, getting those guys used more effectively in terms of motion or crossing patterns, but still being heavy so that you get that, the condensed defense. So then because even though there might be more speed in the receiver room now, it's still not, you know, we don't have Chris Olave that we can, you know, throw it up to. So it's one of those where we're going to have to probably condense the defense with the formations and running the ball, and then utilize, it's kind of like what Wisconsin does, honestly, with how they use, back when they had Cruikshank, they would, you know, get him in motion a bunch and kind of utilize that jet concept, even with Taylor and their power running back in the day. So it's something where, like, you're going to have that spread element, but I think it should come out of the heavier sets, and I'm very excited for that.
You know, John, I think you've given this a little thought over the last few months.
Can't you tell that? I mean, I remember, so like I was talking to you back when the pandemic like hit and everyone was just, you know, like everyone's got their coping mechanisms and whatnot. Like I'm watching every single Illini game, a football game that I can, just over and over, and just finding anything that I can. And then of course 2020 was an absolute dud and it didn't quite matter how much I watched of it. Now we've got like a completely new offensive defense that I can't glean anything from those bits of tape. But at the same time, it's just like that is how I go to my happy place. I just heard, like, it would be like busy season. I'm taking a shower at 3 a.m. because I just need to get out of my room. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm, you know, drawing plays on the tile on the wall because there's enough condensation. And I'm just like thinking about how we can use Isaiah. Now that's an image for the listeners at home, but that's just like, that is what I do as a coping mechanism. Like that is how I when you were talking about what's our first play, I'm like, oh man, I need two tight ends tight to the line. Get me Isaiah in the slot. And if he's possibly the only guy out there, then get him in motion, get him out there in the flat, maybe an out. And I need something. I gotta have it.
You know, my sister, I remember this, when my nephews were younger, like for bath time, they had like markers that would wash off the walls of the tub. Like they could draw, it was like soap, but it was like a crayon that was really soap. So you could get some of these, and then for your, you could just diagram a play, snap, pick, send it to Bielma. I think you're on the staff by 2022, really.
I was going to say, if we got any listeners with children who have some of those markers, then please send me a DM with the recommendation so I can purchase immediately. So that one.
I mean, we gave out your birthday. We might as well give out your address.
Yes, yeah, I'm sure my landlord will love to, you know, check in on yes. the place and just be like, why are there 20 diagrams on the ceiling? Like, do love I have it. To spray my? What's going on here?
Yeah, I love it.
That's just how it rocks for me.
I love it. Okay, we're an hour and 20 in now, so there's Woo! Only like 17 freaks who care about Illinois football.
I was gonna
this
say
much.
We could go another hour and 20, but yeah, right. It's gonna reduce then to just you and me just having a conversation at that point.
That's right. That's right. So, so far 13 players. I'll give my final thought on the class. Like, I'm a little. I guess I would be on the disappointed side for a first class just because, you know, with a heavy, you know, how do I say this properly? Like, A, we have to acknowledge that it's COVID. It's weird. Player evaluations are weird. Offers are weird. Some kids didn't play until March and April. You know, a kid like Joey Okla might have had 31 offers and he had two. You know, it's just a weird year and it's hard to get a read on things. And you know, if we did see Okla with like a Michigan offer and a, you know, whatever offer, we'd be like, oh gosh, this kid is, you know, whatever. So it's hard to get a read on the class. I still am a little disappointed just in that. You know, I'm always hoping for like new coach sells it to, you know, whatever. And, you know, the average rating is around where it was last year, almost identical so far. So this is, you know, so far this is last year's class and we were hoping for something better. But I still like some of the pieces. I like the way they're putting this together. What's your,
I was going to ask, what's your grade before you hand it off? I know it's hard to give a grade in progress, but
yeah, I'm probably a C+.
I was gonna say B-, so we're generally in the same vicinity of thought processes.
Yeah,
like I like looking at Bielema's track record as a recruiter, he was never, you know, like an upper echelon of the Big Ten guy when he was back at Wisconsin. He was never like, he obviously sold probably to better, like he had more 4-stars than we would ever dream to get when he was at Arkansas, but it was never like he was in the middle of the pack at the SEC. So I don't think his bread is necessarily buttered, and you know, he's got to win those, you know, the Austin Browns and the Bostics of the world.
Yep.
But at the same time, his bones are going to be made in the development, and that'll be interesting. And yeah, like, you know, Jordan Anderson or maybe even like a Donovan Leary, like the scarcity with this class, especially with COVID. Now I know that like a place like, I know you went in your article and you diagrammed how, you know, Michigan's not really taking advantage of that extra season that COVID gave them. But at the same time, there's still, if you just apply that outwards, even if it doesn't directly affect them like that, indirectly, there's still, you know, a bunch of options in the transfer portal that will be popping up as a result of COVID that they can, you know, maybe be a bit more selective, or they're not going to be so liberal with throwing out offers to, you know, every top 500 dude. So I think it'll be interesting in terms of how, looking back on this 2022 class, it shakes out, because I think you're going to have that with player scarcity. They're not being the offer sheets that you usually get from Power 5 schools.
Yep. And there's going to be, you know, I've written about this. Like, I would love to see us save a big number. There's going to be a lot of Antonio Sheltons out there, okay? Shelton was actually an Illinois verbal, but then flipped to Penn State just before signing day 4 years ago. Started, I guess, 2019 and 2020. He was a starter on the Penn State defensive line. Penn State didn't bring back many super seniors at all. They just like only brought back a few guys and told everybody else, okay, we're moving on. Shelton transferred to Florida because of that. And you know, is on a lot of those lists of like the best, you know, transfers, this and that. He's an experienced defensive tackle who can step in at Florida and eat up snaps, and you know, great move for Florida. There's going to be a lot of those guys out there, fifth year senior somewhere, they're running their numbers. They were well over the scholarship limit. They got to get back underneath. They got to get back to 85. They just can't bring this guy back, even though he has another year. And so, you know, some offensive or, you know, some defensive tackle at Mississippi State or, you know, even a bigger SEC program, some
Texas
guy,
A&M.
Georgia is going to be like, hey, I still got a year of eligibility. I'm not NFL draftable yet, but I'm a really good college player. They want to get their two recruits in here and I'm out the door, but I've still got talent and I've still got a year of eligibility. There's going to be so many of those guys on the street next spring.
Oh yeah.
And I would love to see us capitalize and, you know, because it's a year where we're going to lose a lot of experience and we're really going to need to plug some guys that can kind of maintain and keep the cliff from being too steep. So,
and this is how we tie a bow on it and get everything coming full circle. We were talking about how are we going to address defensive tackle and safety and all those things. And now, you know, we're just going to find the spare parts that can possibly, because the portal is going to be busier than ever in the going future.
Yep. Bennett Williams will still have a year of eligibility after this year at Oregon. Why not reunite it? And it feels
hashtag
so
the return.
Yes. I love it. Okay, John, we've bored.
This was incredible,
but this is good stuff. We'll do it again. And I think that's it. Go Liner.